The title of the talk is Tshuva, Another Moment, Another Chance. And I want to base it on a Buddhist text and a story. And just a reminder that all the practice that we're doing has in it thousands of years of development, of practice, of guidance, of wise ways of working with our inner life. In 10,000 suttas, traditional texts from thousands of years ago. So I took one text that I like because it's a very nice story. It's just a good story. And it's great to have some good stories. as a kind of ground for this talk. So, the story goes like this. There was a student of a crazy guru. The student was called Angulimala, or became known as Angulimala. He really believed in his guru. But the guru was kind of one of these guys that we all have to be really careful about, who said, well, I've been insulted. You're my student. You go out into the forest and you kill 1,000 people as paying back all those people that insulted me. So we know a few of those kind of political leaders around who's full of their own ego. But it does tell us we have to be pretty careful about who are our teachers, because it can all go really wrong. So it went wrong in this case, and the guru said, you go out and kill 1,000 people. And I, by the way, in brackets, I would say that the Buddha was really careful about this issue and said, you really have to, you cannot let your autonomy be taken away by a spiritual teacher. Your autonomy, your sense of inquiry, your sense of truth, you mustn't let it go, because you're in danger if you give all that to a guru. You need all your power, your center, your wisdom, your awareness, your clarity, and then get teaching from the right person. So Angulimala, he went off into the forest like a kind of innocent dependent criminal. And he began to kill anyone coming through the forest. Shoded Rahim, a bandit. And he killed and he killed and he killed. He killed 999 people. And everyone he killed, he took a finger, cut it off, and put it around his neck. So the word Angulimala is necklace of fingers. That's how he became his name. So everyone was terrified of him in the northern India where this happened. And one day the Buddha heard about this and said, I am going to stop this. And all the monks said, no, 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 you can't go. He kills everybody. He's super strong and there's no chance for you. The Buddha said, no, no, I am going and no one must come with me. I want to go on my own and don't worry about me. And by the way, the Buddha said, according to tradition, his mother is on the way into the forest right now, and if I don't stop him, he'll also kill his mother as the 1,000th victim, and that would be such a suffering. So the Buddha went into the forest, and Angulimala found him, and started to chase him. And the Buddha was walking and walking, and Angulimala was chasing him and couldn't catch him. And shouted at the Buddha, "Stop! Stop! Stop!" And the Buddha turned round to him and said, "You stop. I stopped a long time ago." And the Angulimala then said, as a kind of a kind of a song, he said, "While walking," I'm just quoting the sutta, the text, "while walking, monk, you say, I have stopped. But then I stopped, and you say, I haven't. What do you mean by this? How have you stopped? And how haven't I stopped?" And the Buddha said, "I have stopped, Angulimala, once and for all, stopped all violence towards all living beings. You, though, have no restraint towards living beings. That's how I've stopped, but you haven't." So, this is the first message or important teaching, not the first, but and one of the important messages in this sutta. And so let's take it in to us. The first thing is to stop. You stop. You stop. We stop. Just stop. Before anything else, before receiving teachings, before doing anything, just stop. If you think, in a way, it's always the first statement in the Dharma. Before practice and development and inner growth and learning new qualities and freedoms and so on, just stop. I mean, think about something very difficult for us, like anger. We can develop ways of dealing with anger, and our practice will always reduce anger slowly, slowly, maybe taking years, but our anger goes down. But the value of stopping for a moment before we get into the anger, that stop, if we can think of it as the beginning of a chain that creates anger and suffering, the beginning, that moment of, wait a minute, stop, before I get angry, that's hugely important. Stopping is not easy. Sometimes we feel it's like stopping a express train, a great big boat. We are so full of rhythms of doing, we're so full of habits, we're so full of automatic processes that go on and on. We're so full of memory that we learn and we struggle and so on. It feels like, well, where do I stop? But we can stop at any moment. And it's always kind of a blessing when we do. Just stop before we get caught in the chain. And it's very much Yom Kippur, by the way. Yom Kippur is a day of stopping. That's exactly what it is. That's why I use the word Shabbat Shabbaton for Yom Kippur. It's a day when we stop. We stop the usual tracks. We step out of the usual habits. We step out of the dachaf, the compulsion, the pushing, the driving, what is driving us all the time, on and on and on, to be the same person all the time. Stop. So it's a really important first message. It's a break in conditioning. Atnaya. It's a break in the chain of Paticca-samuppada, of the creation of us and the world all the time. We are creating ourselves as we think we are all the time, and we are creating the world as we think it is all the time, and it's happening. Stop. It stops the chain. I have a nice poem which I haven't read for a long time. It used to be a kind of real Vipassana retreat classic. But for years, everyone, all the Dharma teachers kind of borrow from each other and borrow poems from each other. And this used to be a classic one that was read at retreats, you know, like 20 years ago, but I haven't heard it since then. And I found it again, so I'll read it again. And it's about stopping. It's called Keeping Quiet by Pablo Neruda, Chilean poet. Now we will count to 12, and we will all keep still. For once, on the face of the earth, let's not speak in any language. Let's stop for a second and not move our arms so much. It will be an exotic moment without rush, without engines. We would all be together in a sudden strangeness. Fishermen in the cold sea would not harm whales. Those who prepare wars, wars with gas, wars with fire, victories with no survivors, would put on clean clothes and walk about with their brothers in the shade, doing nothing. What I want should not be confused with total inactivity. Life is what it is about. If we were not so single-minded about keeping our lives moving and for once could do nothing, perhaps a huge silence might interrupt this sadness of never understanding ourselves and of threatening ourselves with death. Now I'll count up to 12, and you keep quiet, and I will go. The work to stop is a life's work. We do stop in moments. We stop when we sit 45 minutes here in the room. We stop in a moment when we're just about the will, ratzon says, react, tguva, react. And we say no. That's a moment. But stopping is not easy. And a lot of our practice is about that. Quietening, stopping. And there are ways of meditation which really emphasize this. The word nirod in Sanskrit is cessation, stopping. And it's about disappearing. The structures that make our mind and even our body, they're just whoop, gone. This gone is part of the practice, should we say. It's an element of the practice where, as I say, we stop building the world and ourselves in the old ways that we are so used to, conditioned ways. Anyway, so the Buddha sat with him And by the way, it's an interesting point. If you are base, if you find yourself in a situation of violence, like what did the Buddha with his wisdom do with Angulimala? He didn't shout at him, stop, stop. He gave him a puzzle. I stopped a long time ago, now it's your turn, now you stop. Whoop! He couldn't deal with that. And he said it in the tradition. People run away and I kill them, people beg for mercy and I kill them, or people attack me and I kill them. I know those. But what you're doing? So sometimes if you're in struggling, if you're in a situation of violence, conflict, argument, with others, the best thing you can do sometimes is to offer a puzzle, to be nobody can pin you down. Say something that it makes a question, and it, like, the whole thing collapses. It's if you pull, a cobra. I've been seeing this in India so much. The people that play with a cobra. How you play with a cobra? A cobra has a track of aggression. It has to collect itself and go up and make its hood and then go like that, and then it can strike. So it has a chain of things. So if you go behind the cobra and pull its tail, it can't do anything. It all collapses. It's nothing you can do. It can't hurt you. So it's the same way if you kind of pull the tail out of from chain of problematic situations with a puzzle, a question, a confusion, I do it sometimes with my grandchildren when they get into a kind of aggressive situation, just offering them something which is completely not logical. Just take, go out. Anyway, that's what happened. So Angulimala said, okay, so tell me what you mean. And the Buddha sat with him and gave him Dharma, and he became a monk. And what does that mean? The Buddha made him a monk, meaning practice our conditioning, practice awareness, practice seeing who we are, explore our inner world, where is our motivations, what are our thoughts, who are we really, what's behind our conditioning. Also remembering our perfection, remembering something which is perfect in us, which is absolutely okay. The Buddha gave this Dharma. And I think it is in the word tshuva on Yom Kippur. The word tshuva is about coming back to our real nature, coming back home to who we really are. It's not you say, chozrim b'tshuva. But it's not to go back to somewhere, as if we've got an answer. Tshuva is not an answer. Tshuva is a resetting, is starting again. I think what I like the word tshuva because it's also used in a way just like the story of Angulimala. What happened to Angulimala was a 180 degree turning from being a major killer to an awakened monk. That you can hardly imagine something more radical, this 180 degree shift. But that's what the turning is, and there are many texts which talk about the Dharma practice as the great turning. The great turning. And what that means is, instead of being on automatic pilot, doing our conditioning, we turn to ourselves and take responsibility for what's in our mind and our heart. We turn to see who we are. We turn the gaze to our person instead of just acting in the world there. We turn like the mirror. The mirror is not such a good analogy, really, because we are the mirror. It's not that we're looking in the mirror. We become the mirror. But it's the turning, and the Buddha called it the great turning. And he said, it's not easy, and it's a lion's roar, the roar of the lion, Sharga Arye, is the turning, because it's not easy. It's something we need to do, but it's, as you see yourself, when you're sitting here in the heat, in the under the fans for 45 minutes and the body is hurting and you want to go home, or where, why did I actually end up in Kleel? I could have been in an air-conditioned flat in Tel Aviv right now watching movies. What did I do to myself? But wait, it's the turning, it's the great turning when we turn to take responsibility for our actual experience and who we are. It's a reset. Moed bet, Rachel told me. Moed bet, which I really like that, because some months ago I had to do a Nehega course, a refreshing course, because I had plenty of Nukudot. And the guy kept saying, on the roads, in the roads, no moed bet, in moed bet. So it stuck in me as a kind of it's true. In a way, in life, in moed bet, we don't have second chances, but yet we do. And tshuva is really giving ourselves a second chance. It's the title of this talk. You know, another moment, another chance. We do actually have another chance. We can start again and see things fresh. And so tshuva, what happened to Angulimala, is all of these things. The great turning. It's shifting the person to another track altogether. It's stopping harming and suffering. It's forgiveness, which is also a theme. It's tshuva, it's going back to our true nature. And a big shift is possible. It's interesting that part of the story, the local king arrived with with 500 soldiers, and he passed through where the Buddha was staying, and he went on foot to the Buddha, and the Buddha said, what's happening, great king? Are you going to war? Are you start with all your soldiers? No other country has provoked me. I'm not going to war, but there is a bandit, Shoded Drachim, in my kingdom, called Angulimala, and he's brutal and he's bloody and he shows no mercy and he's killed hundreds and he's turned villages into non-villages and he's wiped out towns, he's turned towns into non-towns, and I am going to stamp him out with my 500 soldiers. And the Buddha said to him, great king, suppose you were to see Angulimala with his hair and his beard shaved off, wearing the robes of a monk, and gone forth from his life into a monk's life of no home, and is stopping from killing all beings, and stopping from taking the five precepts, in other words, stopping from killing and harming, stopping from taking what is not given, stopping from telling lies, living the holy life on one meal a day, and of a fine character, and a virtuous, beautiful person, and what would you do to him then? Oh, said the king, I would bow down to him. I would greet him. I would offer him a seat. I would give him presents of robes or food or medicines. And I will protect him. But how can there be such virtue in such a horrible, evil character? And then the Buddha pointed out, here he is, this is him, that monk there is Angulimala. And then the king, beautiful images, the king was frightened and terrified and his hair stand on end. And the Buddha, sensing the king's fear and his terror, with his hair rising, said to him, don't be afraid, great king, don't be afraid, he has no danger to you. And then his fear, the king's fear went down, and he went over to Angulimala, who's the monk now, venerable Angulimala, and said, are you really Angulimala, Lord? Give him respect, because he was a monk. Yes, great king. What is your father's clan? What is your mother's clan? My father is Gaga, great king. My mother is Mantani. So he said to the king, I am fine now. I don't need anything from you. The power of this story is how our fate can change. Karma is not a kind of a steamroller, a huge monster that just eats us, and if we do something wrong, we get it back on us, and if we do something wrong, get it back on us, and it's like one-to-one, some automatic fate goral that is waiting for us if we do something wrong. That's a complete misunderstanding. Karma, indeed, is our, there is a pattern in the world. If we throw out violence, we tend to get it back. If we throw out love, we tend to get it back. If we get up in the morning with love, we will notice that the world loves us. If we get up in the morning with anger and irritation, we will feel everybody is against us. There is a boomerang in life. There is an echo in life. It's true. There is a tendency in life. But it's totally flexible. And we can change it. We can change things radically. And the story of Angulimala is a beautiful story of that. But I want to go a bit closer. Because what happened then, Angulimala was walking around the villages healing people. And he came to a woman who was in giving birth. And the woman was dying because the baby was coming out in the wrong way. And they came to Angulimala because he was a monk from the Buddha. And the monks of the Buddha were known to be healers and powerful people. He came to the monk who was walking through the village, said, please, please, rescue this woman. And Angulimala came back to the Buddha and said, I want to rescue this woman, but I don't quite know how. And the Buddha said, tell this woman that you've never killed anybody before. And Angulimala said, like, what? That's a precept. It's the third precept. I can't lie. The Buddha said, okay, in that case, tell this woman that you've never killed or harmed anybody since you've become a monk. So he did that. He came to the woman and said, I am Angulimala. I've never killed or harmed anybody since I was a monk. And the woman survived. And the implication of that, the message in there is that he could show that life is not a kind of a automat, a track, that you can change things, that things are not because of this, then that. Because you're having a baby like that, then you will be sick, you will die from childbirth. Things can change radically. Look at me. Change is possible, radical change is possible, and you can do it. More or less, what are you saying to the woman? You can change. Something can change. You're not going to die. Think that you will not die. Think change. And it's really important for us, especially in Yom Kippur and in the whole life, to really see the way everything is changeable. We can change everything because we create the world. So as we create it, we can change it. There is a poem which I like to sort of express. It says, "Sow a thought, zorea machshava, and reap kotzea mila." Sow a thought, reap a word. Sow a word, zorea mila, kotzea pula. Zorea pula, kotzea hergel. Zorea hergel, kotzea ishiut. Zorea ishiut, v'kotzea goral. So it all starts with the sowing of a seed of a thought, and it goes all the way from habit and so on to personality and then to goral, to fate. But if we change that thought, then everything changes. Kol ha'shar sheret will be somewhere else. If we have a different thought, we'll be totally different place. Everything is dynamic. Everything is changeable. We can stop karma. By stopping the chain of action, we stop karma. We just get off the wheel. We just stop the chains of action and reaction, of conditioning, of automatic. A truly awakened person doesn't make any more karma. Nothing happens. No results. But as Angulimala was wandering through the village, the villages, people knew, even though he was a monk, people saw that he was Angulimala, and they'd lost all their relatives, and they'd lost their families, and they'd lost because of him. He'd killed so many people. So the villagers were angry, and they threw sticks at him, and stones, and they hit him with sticks, and so on, even though he was a monk. And again, the Buddha, he came back to the Buddha and said, he came to the Buddha, his head broken open and dripping with blood, his bowl broken, his robes torn to pieces. And he went to the Buddha, and the Buddha saw him coming, and when he saw him, he said, "Bear with it, bear with it, just bear it, because the fruit of karma you are experiencing here and now." And in other words, there is, in this case, there are things that happened that it was beyond him. Never mind, he more or less cleaned all the karma, but there was still some left over. That's what the Buddha said. There is some things left over that you will just need to bear it. You cannot control everything. You can change like 99%, but you cannot change 100% of karma. Things happen. not in your control. And there is a, in a way, there is something, I talked about this with Rachel and I asked her, so what is it, you know, how do you relate to that in the day of Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah and so on? And she says, there's a song that you sing in the prayer book, which is Noseh Avon V'Pesha. I don't know the whole song, but it's Noseh Avon V'Pesha. And it basically says, Chata, or Chet, that you did by accident, or it's not so serious, this is easy. You can wipe it out, it can be forgotten. But Noseh Avon V'Pesha, there are things which are too big, and Noseh, you have to bear them. And you need other things, you need to do things, you need to do real tshuva for those things that are in the category of heavy, shall we say. And I think it's important for us to know that sometimes when we talk about, for example, forgiveness, and there are many people say this, you know, forgiveness can't be just inside you. You need surely to go out and make an action and say to somebody, I hurt you here, I want to repair it. Not just internal, but external. Sometimes we need more than just a process of inside forgiveness and of resetting or starting again. But still, the process if you like tikkun is not attaching ourselves, not supporting or getting stuck in the chain of unwise actions that will keep happening, getting off the wheel. We may need some forgiveness there. We may need to be wise. We may need to go to someone we've hurt and pay them back money. We may need to do that. That's part of the wisdom. But 90% of it is here. Guilt, for example, isn't very helpful. I remember years ago when working with Palestinians and Israelis and going to Shechem in the workshops, and one Palestinian said to us Israelis, because there was a time when we were really, the Israelis were really crying and saying how guilty they felt at the suffering that the occupation is causing to Palestinian families and children and people. And the Palestinian said, we don't need your guilt. Your guilt doesn't help us. We need a free person to help us and listen to us. We need, guilt just makes you paralyzed and stuck. And I think there's a wisdom in that. So how do we practice from here, from ourselves, in this retreat, in this in the Dharma? What can we learn now from the story of Angulimala? The first and important thing is the power of stopping, of just getting off the chain of attachment, heachzuyot, of the usual way of doing things, of the usual way we think about things, of the usual needs that we have. I have to have like this, I must have like that, this has to be like that, I am like that. And go further in this stopping as much as we can. Go into silence. Extend the silence. feel the place of emptiness in us, where nothing needs to happen and nothing is happening, just life. Go into these places of empty space. And we do this by collecting ourselves. Samadhi means collecting. We gather ourselves and we settle down quietly and we go into a kind of presence which doesn't need anything, which isn't going anywhere, which is just stopped, arrived, quiet, focused. And then we apply mindful awareness to what we experience, aware of what is arising for us, aware of our thoughts, aware of our body, aware of the trees, aware of the leaves on the trees, aware of what our feet are doing when we're walking. Going back to really opening our world, this is the turning, the great turning. Open our world to what's really happening right now. A deep seeing of this moment. What is this moment for me? It doesn't need to be comfortable. It may be uncomfortable. You may be sitting here with your back hurting. But just a sense, this is the experience. I take responsibility for my experience. It arises and passes. It doesn't need to control me. I am with it. The key is awareness, slowly, slowly touching our awareness without it constructing, making things. We just holding our awareness as an aware human being with what is arising right now. And that's enough. And there's something there which is primal, ma'od mod atik, ma'od basisi, ma'od, fundamental as a human being, just to be aware, without it needing to make things out of it and to be in the habit of constructions. Tshuva is going back to that place, primal place, of just returning to our base, our source, our background, and it's joyful, and it's peaceful, and it's quiet, and it's harmless. In that place, we do no harm to ourselves or to anybody else. Okay, I think that's enough. Thank you. So we'll just take one moment of quiet, and then we can open it to some questions. Iran, how do I deal with this?